Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
If your creative instincts are tuned correctly, who would you rather a great artist indulge? Their audience, the radio, the record label, their expectations about the market, whatever. If they're really, they're being vulnerable and honest, then like there's nothing you would rather an artist indulge than their true creative instinct. Because that's the thing that's going to dip the bucket into the deep well of resonance and feeling that's going to then, if you amplify and put that somewhere where it can be found, it will be found by people who share that story. And the more specific, the better, because the narrower, the deeper. And so like, that's why that works. And so for me, it's been a matter of figuring out, who are those people? What is it that I am somehow uniquely doing for them that speaks to some specific resonance in our stories together? And how can I focus all of my obsessive attention on that? And the more I've managed to do that, the more I've managed to stay successful at it, even with a very small audience. And so that's been kind of the trick, you know.
Hey there, I'm Benjamin J. Thomas. You know, it's not every day that you get to sit down and talk to one of your artistic heroes. But I got to have one of those days this week, and I'm super excited to share that conversation with you today. We're in the middle of a conversation series with a variety of individuals from different fields who are tapping into their unique divine creativity at this particular moment in time and bringing goodness and beauty and healing and life into the world. Today's guest might be a familiar name to some of you. And for some of you, this will just be an introduction to him and his work. Today, we're speaking with singer-songwriter Derek Webb. Derek is a Nashville-based singer-songwriter and a veteran influential voice within and beyond the Christian music industry. See my air quotes. Over the course of the past 25 or so years, Derek has made a career out of making forward-thinking, forward-leaning art, first with his band Cademan's Call, which he founded in the mid-90s, and then as a solo artist. Derek is well known for his progressive musicality and his unwaveringly honest lyrics, calling into question everything from our relationship with politics to our evolving understanding of gender roles and issues. For me, as an artist and a spiritual person, Derek's work has been truly formational, and he's definitely somebody I look up to as a model for creating with complete integrity. I think you're going to love our conversation. Welcome our friend, Derek Webb. Friends, today we're here with Derek Webb and Anna Hammond. Hello, friends.
Hey.
Derek coming to us from Nashville today, from home in Nashville. Is this your home studio, right?
Yeah.
Very good. And Anna's joining us from Massachusetts. You're visiting
Massachusetts
family out there. So thanks for joining
friends
us both.
Out here. Yeah, where it's always spooky season.
Always spooky season in Salem. Season. I've got to start with this because Derek, when we were like searching for stuff to use and like to talk about you and social media and stuff like that, there's things. But like the first image that comes up is when you search Derek Webb is this guy. Now I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't think that that's just like you before you had like some work done.
Yeah. Unfortunately we both have shaved heads or whatever.
Do you know who is this man?
Yeah. So, and it's fascinating. I mean, it's happened a few times, over the years. Apparently there were a few of us competing for the most famous Derek Webb in the world. And this guy, man, it's like we're neck and neck all the time. But he's a British gentleman, from my understanding, who was like an innovator in the world of competitive poker.
Oh.
And he's like a big gambling poker kind of innovator. And he's like this, you know. And anyways, I mean, what I know is I snagged all the good social handles and I own the URL. So
nice. That's the important stuff.
I think I kind of won.
The battle of the Derek Webbs. Now, just don't go against him in poker. Do you play poker at all? Are you a gamer? No.
No. I'm not probably a poker good player. So he would absolutely destroy me in poker. but let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah. Yeah. But and so for those of you listening to the podcast, just Google Derek Webb and you'll find who we're talking about.
Yeah. Luckily, you do have you have to look a little to find him, but he's usually there. I mean, he's in the mix.
Yeah, he's in there.
Dozen or so photos. Yeah, there's that guy.
There's a lot of Ben Thomases out there, and that there's a few of us that are constantly kind of competing. So that I changed mine to Benjamin J. Thomas, partly for that, because there's like a lot less of us. So I'm like, all right, let's do that.
That's right.
Derek, you know, your artistry, your music, I shared this a little bit ago, has been personally transformative to me as a human being, as a person of faith, and as an artist. A lot of folks might or might not know different parts of your life and your story, but I'd love to just give a little quick snapshot of like growing up, Derek, like where at what point, like where was it within you? Because a lot of the what we're talking about during these conversations is that sort of seed of creativity, this like divine seed that we think it starts to bloom a lot of times around childhood. A lot of people have a lot of excuses that they squash it or they ignore it and they don't feed it. You heard that and you felt that at some point. Can you recall like what that was like early on?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for that, by the way. I grew up in a reasonably musical house. My mom is a musician and she's a fantastic piano player. And so she kind of started me on piano. And then when I found the guitar, which I dug out of my mom's closet, which she had aspirations to play the guitar apparently, but didn't want to keep her nails so short that she would be able to. So it wound up just stuck in the closet. So
I conflict dug of interest out, there. And
yeah. And so, so that opened the opportunity. And so, but by the time I was, you know, by the time I was probably a teenager, I had already logged my 10,000 hours. Like once I found music, it was clear to me because, everything else that I was trying and everything else that is typically measured in your kind of childhood, early adolescence, I was terrible at all of those things, all the things that are being measured at that time. I was terrible at social stuff, sports stuff, school stuff. I was terrible, absolutely terrible at every one of those things. I was a total failure at all that. And so when I found, and all my friends little by little were kind of finding themselves situated somewhere in some of those things, and you get rewarded for it. You get recognized and you get, you know, and because that's what people are kind of, those are easy measurements when you're that age. And totally. I didn't have any of that. And so once I found music, it was like finally something that made sense to me, something I could do, something I enjoyed. And so I boxed out around that. And unfortunately it made me worse at all those other things. Well, and for me, it's like, once I found it, I was like, oh, this is it. Like, this is the thing. Yeah. This is my thing. To me, it was like, that's how it felt. And that was my experience of it. And it was fun and it came really easy. Mm-hmm. And what do they say? Like the language of calling, which is kind of more, it tends to be more of a spiritual category, but what I've always kind of thought about it is it's the intersection of three things. And if you don't have all three, it's not going to work. And that is, interest, talent, and opportunity. And if you don't have all three, if you have interest and talent but no opportunity, not going to work. Opportunity and talent but no interest, not going to work. So it's like you can be great at math but hate it, and it's not going to work out. You know. And so for me, I loved it, and I was good at it, and I had opportunity to do it. And so it absolutely took root when I was really young. Yeah.
Mm. When did you start writing music?
Not too much when I was younger. Because mostly what I was doing was playing in like cover band, like rock cover bands. We would do some original stuff, but I was writing really bad songs probably mid high school. I started, you know, like, I don't know when that would have been, but like when I was, you know, in probably 15 or 16, but like everybody who's that age, I was writing terrible poetry. And so, about whatever I was feeling at that time, and, not great songs. And I wasn't really contributing songs to the bands that I was in too much or anything.
Yeah.
But, by the time I was like late high school, I'd been writing for long enough that I'd been able to get some of the bulk of bad songs out of the way and start to kind of, anytime you do a new thing, you're going to be terrible at it at first because you've never done it before. So it's like, that's to be expected. If you push through that, then sometimes, you know, things can present themselves. And so it wasn't until actually right out of high school, what would have been the second semester of my freshman year of college, I didn't go to college, but what would have been is when I met all the Cadman's Call people and we started that band. in Houston. And so, and in the context of that band is when the opportunity came for me to write.
Yeah.
And only because there was this great opportunity, there were people who were paying attention, and I had better source material by that time as a songwriter. And so I didn't really start writing until I had joined the band, been in the band for about a year maybe. And that's when I started writing.
Yeah.
Again, songs that you could actually go find anywhere.
Well, it's interesting because you like evolved into it in some way. And I think young people have an easier time understanding that, like, I'm going to be shitty at this thing until I do it a lot. Us as adults, sometimes we expect, like, oh, I'm going to be really good at this. Like, I'm going to be an expert right away. But kids, right. Young people, they kind of can have that patience. And it seems like you just slowly did that. But then as that happened, those opportunities and the interest, what did you say? The three things, the intersection of interest,
talent,
opportunity, and talent.
And opportunity. Yeah, you have to be good at it. You have to like doing it, and you have to have an opportunity to do it.
And those doors kind of kept opening for you, and you kind of kept evolving in that. And a hallmark really of your career, in my perspective, is as somebody, as an artist who has been more focused on having integrity and being honest with yourself and creating things out of that place, and somehow being able to sort of transcend a lot of the labels that industry and such has put on you or attempted to over the years. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that, like that process of like always staying true to self as opposed to the label ideas?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing I like to say, I mean, words are important and really helpful when you find some that, you know, kind of distill a complex idea and you can kind of, so I have, what I've said a lot and I think has been helpful for me is that, at least at that time, I would have identified as an evangelical Christian, and that was definitely the grid through which I was looking at the world. And so, and for the majority of my career, and even still, regardless of how I feel about whatever, I mean, that's still kind of where my stuff tends to land, and that's my preoccupation is with kind of the spiritual stuff. And so that, but the point is, the quote that I like, that I use a lot, is that the word Christian, when applied to anything other than a human being, is a marketing term. And and that's not even a dig. I mean, marketing terms are super helpful. It's really helpful to help people to find their way to things in culture they wish to consume. Mm-hmm. And so marketing categories are fantastic. They can be. For me, when I think of terms or categories like that, when it comes to worldview or it comes to like belief or just suspicions or opinions about invisible reality or whatever it is, I think that categories like that tend to be an effort to give a short answer to a question for which there is no short answer. Mm. And so I don't love categories like that.
Yeah,
and so I have always been really resistant personally to let people too easily categorize me as a person, just because it's like the life moves too fast to accept a cat. By the time I acknowledge a category and it gets printed on a piece of paper, I might not be squarely in that spot anymore. Yeah. So like, why be a bad communicator? It's one of those things like where if 10 people define a word 10 different ways, then you shouldn't use that word anymore because it doesn't mean anything.
Right. Totally.
And so why would I accept categories that I don't even know what I'm agreeing to? Like, unless somebody asks me a question that includes categorical statements like that or agreements, unless I have them define every single word in their question, mm-hmm. there's no way I'm going to give them an answer. What I usually do, ironically, is what I think Jesus would do, and that is to ask a follow-up. I mean, in every occasion, Jesus was pinned down. He asked a follow-up. He turned questions into more questions. And so it's not simple answers to things like that. So that tends to be my kind of MO when it comes to, you know, kind of trying to steer clear of some of those categories. However, you know, I just put a record out a few months ago. It's called The Jesus Hypothesis, and I released it intentionally into the Christian and gospel category. I mean, that's like literally, you make choices. I mean, and there's no gatekeepers at this point. You just, when you're putting your music online, it asks you, what category is it? Yeah. In other words, who's it for? It's a marketing category.
Yeah.
Christian is the only marketing category we have. Go look at Spotify, look at all the categories of all the music. It's the only one that is not a style category. It is a subject matter. It's a topical belief category. Has nothing to do with style. It's the only one. All rock category songs are rock music. Yeah. all Christian songs are only from supposedly a Christian perspective or have right. Christian ideas or whatever in them. But the style's all over the map. So it's a really weird category. But I felt as though it's exactly who my new record is for. That's who mm-hmm. I hope finds it. Mm-hmm. There's a song on the new record mm-hmm. about the Apostle Paul. Like, if you don't have some knowledge or background in Christianity, evangelical Christianity, you're not really going to get this record. So that is who it's for. So totally. I do yeah. use it.
Yeah.
But I use it when I have use for it.
Yeah.
When it comes yeah. to personally, I don't yeah. have it.
That's... But,
one yeah. thing that's interesting for me is that, to kind of back up a little bit, you spent your childhood, your adolescence, kind of like becoming fluent in this language of music. And then you learn to express yourself through songwriting, which is a very different kind of communication. We're talking about creativity and all these ways that we can kind of express ourselves. And then you're sort of saying, well, I don't like simple words. And that totally makes sense to me mm-hmm. because you've spent mm-hmm. hours and hours and hours learning to express yourself through this alternate medium that is so much more complicated than just a single word for a category. Mm. You know, like if someone really wants to understand you, they should listen to your music, you know,
yeah, it takes,
not just
it
say,
takes
what's the one word, you know, what right. are five yeah. words that I can use?
Yeah. And that's what I've tried to kind of encourage whoever I can to say, like, if somebody really wants to know, then they'll answer your follow-up questions. And if mm. all they were trying to do is simplify and reduce you,
yeah.
Maybe in an effort to categorize and dismiss you, then don't, you know, like you don't, just because someone asks you a question doesn't mean you have to answer it. If they don't have time for the answer, don't, then they don't have time for you as a person. So it's like, it's interesting that way. And, you know, I, as an artist over the years, have never really released, I don't release singles. I don't like individual songs, just drop them out there and there they are and they just exist on their own. I'm old school this way. I'm almost 50, but it's like, I think in terms of albums. I think in terms of groups of songs, like 9, 10, 11, 12 songs together. And that's because I'm selfish this way, but I want more time. Yeah. I'm not super interested in saying something I can say in 3 or 4 minutes, like a single song, right. and that be it. I need a good hour. And so yeah. I think in terms of album collections of songs, because I'd rather say one thing 10 ways than 10 things.
Mm. Yeah.
I just don't understand. That's not how I'm wired. I want to spend some time getting way down to the nuances of a thing where if you don't listen to all 10 songs, you're not really even going to get the whole idea. You're not going to get all the gritty details that I'm trying to go into. You need all of it to make sense. That's always the way I've been. That's the way I make music, and that's the music I enjoy, you know, mm-hmm. also. So
I'm so yeah. similar in
it's
that
so good
regard.
That you've identified that about yourself. Yes, you are.
And I'm like, I'm hearing it. I'm like, oh, yeah, totally. Like 1,000%. Yeah. And yeah. I also get that flies in the face of a lot of the marketing and the stuff. It's a lot easier to sell a single, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But the opportunity, though, and the invitation, I think that this is the beautiful thing, is that if you follow that along, and then especially if you follow along, say, a career, you're invited into like the power that art has, which I think is to move us beyond the binary and beyond the black and white and the easy answer stuff into like heart mm-hmm. and essence. And I think that's like also the invitation of Christ. And I'm really curious about in an alternate universe, Derek Webb, you know, you took the pop route and you said yes to all the things that made only pop sense, right? And I think somewhere in that though,
what does that mean?
Like thinking about like making all your records to fit a particular category, all of your decisions to create art, if it was only driven by metrics, then you know, I think your art, the arc of your career, artistry, in my opinion, and it seems as if it wouldn't have had the gravitas, the legs, the balls, the thing to it that like mm-hmm. makes it essential and meaningful. And so to watch then what you've been able to do over the course of the past, you know, couple decades really, is walk with a community of people through as you, just faith-wise, have taken your faith apart. You've let your faith evolve. I think we're all evolving beings. I think that it seems like this is just how it is. And when we sell ourselves short by going straight to the binary quick answers, we cut off our ability to like really evolve in a way that I think is just the nature way, right? This is our plants do this. I don't know if that's so much a question. It just is more like, hey, do you see how, is there an arc of your career that you've been able to then with your platform that you've been able to do is speak into people's lives and kind of ask some really hard questions that you, it seems like you're opening that book and letting people walk alongside you with that.
I mean, it just takes time. And so it is very kind of, it tends to be a little contrary to the way that the market tends to work. And so it just, so I would rather go really deeply with like a few people mm-hmm. than only go so deep with like a lot of people. And here's the other thing I want to say is like, there isn't a right or wrong way to do it. I have friends for whom it is no compromise for them to make the absolute best, catchiest pop songs ever and only ever really be interested in spending 3 or 4 minutes at a time with people. And for them, that's no compromise. There's no right or wrong way to do it. This is just the way that I am wired to kind of do it, the way I enjoy doing it, and the way I think I'm kind of getting them, using every part of the buffalo in terms of my creativity. And so what I've always said, and I'm proud even of, is like, my music is not for everybody. And I would never, ever try to get on, you know, any platform and say that it was. In fact, my music's for hardly anybody. And for those people, even, it's not even for all the time. It's only for some of the time. So it's like, I've really gotten myself into an absolute tight niche of a corner in terms of what I do. And what I feel like I do well when I'm doing whatever I do and I'm doing it well, I feel like I know what that is. And so it's like, I've had to figure out how to make a career out of it, knowing that it's only for a tiny group of people and only for some of their time. How do I stay in the job and steward it well and make sure I can continue doing it, which means it has to generate income for me. So that's honestly has been probably the thing that has, to your original question, kept me the most honest is that I have a very focused work ethic in terms of like, what am I doing? Who am I doing it for? Why am I doing it? And it kind of, for especially for creatives, I think that for what's really been helpful for me with some of my friends has been like getting clear on what business you're in. And what I mean by that, yes, as independent musicians or whatever, you know, or songwriters, we're all in the music business. Yes. But like specifically, what business are you in? In other words, what do people resonate with and value about what you are doing, what you're saying, the way you're saying it? What is that? And for me, it took me a surprising long time to really distill it and really figure it out. And what I eventually learned is that what I am in is the intimacy business. That is my business. And so what I'm doing when it's working, I'm doing it for I'm doing something very specific for a very small group. And what I do tends to not scale well, because when you're dealing in such nuances, the larger the crowd in front of you gets, the harder it's going to be to bring everybody along to make sure that you answer every hand that shoots up when someone starts to misunderstand the language you're using. It's like, you have to keep that small for it to work. At least for the way I do it to work. So, that has been really helpful. And whenever I kind of veer out of that lane a little bit, I immediately know, oh man, I'm making the wrong decisions for the business I'm in right now. Yeah. It's like when there were, you know, it's why I literally only exclusively play house shows. And that was a choice I made a handful of years ago, where like, I don't care what opportunities come my way. I don't care if I sell 500,000 records this next year, I will just play, I'll play 10 shows in one town for 50 people at a time rather than playing, you know, one show for 500 or 5,000. I'm just not going to do that. And, cause it just, the intimacy doesn't scale well. Yeah. The authenticity does not scale well.
Yeah.
What's interesting for me about that is I'm thinking, I'm not a working artist, you know, that's not how I make my survival. But what's interesting about that is like knowing yourself and knowing like my creative work and who is that for? Kind of like, who are my people? Like, what kind of friends are going to serve me well in my life? And who am I going to serve well in my life? Like that's not like, I don't want anyone who's listening to tune out because like, I don't make money doing my art, so whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, no. Like that knowledge about yourself and kind of what your lane is, I'm guessing that took you a while to figure that out.
Yeah, well,
I think that knowledge is really important for anyone who's living a creative life.
I think so too. I mean, the advice I try to give my younger artist friends is like, figure out what is the most peculiar about you mm-hmm. and about the way you see the world and about your story and about the way that your creative instincts, and lean as hard into those peculiarities as you possibly can. Like, don't, the conventional wisdom tends to be, do something that's relatable broadly. Do something that's general, like write lyrics that are abstract enough that a lot of people could find themselves in those lyrics and understand what you're talking about or whatever. I've actually found absolutely that the opposite is true. The more specific you can be, the more particular you can be, the more you can lean into what's peculiar and unique and strange about you. Because the thing is, I genuinely believe that there is an audience for everybody on some scale. There are people. And so for me, or for somebody else, it's like, if you hide your peculiarities in a broadly abstract lyric, then the people who are going to be specific, for whom you are specifically writing soundtrack, and for whom you may be the only person who can write soundtrack because your stories align and resonate in such a way that you might be the only one who really truly understands how it really deeply feels to be those people. And it's because they have resonances in your stories and things that you don't even know about. But if you hide all that down in more abstract lyric to try to be more broadly resonant and successful or whatever, then the people who are going to most deeply resonate aren't going to be able to find you. They're just not going to be able to identify you.
Yeah.
And I have this great, very brief story about a friend of mine. And this is a great anecdote for creatatives who are, this maybe is a good model. So I had this friend of mine who came to me, and we spent regular time kind of hanging out, talking about our work or whatever. And he was telling me at one point, he thought he was going to just kind of give up. He said, listen, I've made 2 or 3 EPs at this point. I think they're really good. I've worked, like, they're excellent. I've worked with good people. The songs are good. I mean, I really think I'm good at this, but it's just not resonating. Like, I don't understand why it's not taking off and why it's not successful. And I play and no one's showing up, and I don't get why it's not working. And he said, you know, well, can I send you my newest thing? Listen to it. Tell me what you think. And I knew this guy pretty well. And so he sent it to me. I listened to it. I was like, it sounds great, actually. Like, the songs are great and the production on the record is great. But the problem is, when I listen to this, I know you pretty well. When I listen to this, I don't really feel like I learn anything about you. Mm-hmm. I feel like these are good songs and they sound good. And so it's excellent. There's no doubt. But I don't feel like there's anything, I don't know any more about you hearing this than I would if I didn't know you. And I know you pretty well. And the things I know about you, I'm not hearing really in any of this. So here's my challenge to him was, like, tell me really quick, what is something that you would consider kind of like a peculiar part of your story or personality or something that you love or hate or something that you're a crazy weird expert in, or like, give me something that's really far out, a standard deviation or two, like really give me something. Like, what's just something with the top of your head? What's something that is a huge interest or a huge preoccupation, or just give me anything.
Yeah.
And his instinct was, well, me and my wife, I had been working for years to try to adopt a child from another country. And that's like a thing that we've put a ton of our life in, a ton that we talk about. And it's been a real heartache and roller coaster up and down. It's a thing I know a ton about because I researched it, and I'm in all these random like Facebook groups with people who are all doing this. And I was like, okay. Have you ever tried writing anything about that at all? Like, any aspect of that whole thing? And he was like, no, like, that's why I don't know what I would write. I don't know how, why would I do? I was like, all right, well, here's my thing. Like, because that's really interesting to me. And that's such an interesting, specific thing. And so now we're finding our way into a narrower niche. That's what we're looking for. Like, something that makes you interesting or unique or peculiar versus everybody else. So it's like, so would you just try to write something like that? Write something about that. Just as an exercise. Because what you're doing really well and it doesn't seem to be working. Just try this.
Yeah.
So he went away, came back about a week later. He sent me a text with like an iPhone recording. He's all right, well, I wrote this song about all that. Here it is. Check it out. I listened to it. And I was like, dude, this is like the best song I've ever heard from you, first of all. Because he got into just like the heartbreak and the ups and downs emotionally, what it's like to go. I was like, I can't necessarily relate, but I really hear it in this song. So that's not my story. But I was like, here's what you ought to do. Go to one of those Facebook groups where it's you and your wife and all these people. And some of these groups are huge. And share that. And just like, give it as a gift. And just say like, and so he did. He went and he posted it up. He's like, listen, you know, we all talk, we all hang out. We don't all know what the rest of us do for jobs and stuff. I'm a professional musician in Nashville. I wrote this song kind of about what my wife and I are experiencing. And some of y'all might resonate and relate to this. So I'm just kind of, it's just an iPhone recording. I'm just kind of share it with y'all. I think what he did was he just put it up on his Spotify, just to be easier for them to listen to it or whatever. But it was just a demo. And literally within like a few weeks, it had a zero or two at the end of it more than anything else he'd ever put on Spotify in terms of listens, because it hit that community like a brush fire.
Yeah.
They so deeply resonated with the emotion that was in it. They all started sharing it with everybody else that they're connected to in every other Facebook group. And there's hundreds of thousands of people, you know, these are not, just because I'm using the word niche does not mean it's small. And it's certainly not so small that you can't make a great living writing soundtrack for a group of people who resonate deeply with your story. Yeah. And so for him, within months, he was being brought into conferences that focus on this and come in and play. He made an EP of music that was only about this. He literally finally found his spot. It finally took root and that became his identity. That's the business he was in. And so it's like, that's what you're looking for. Don't avoid those things. You're like, why would I write a song about this? It's so specific and random. Like no one's going to, if it resonates deeply with you, if it's a big part of your life, it makes you feel things. I promise you there is a reasonable enough group of people that you could probably at least, you know, it would be worth your time to do this job and it would be extremely meaningful. And you might be the only person on the planet who could write soundtrack for those people. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
That's what he found.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I like that story. And it makes me think about how so much of good art, like we think, oh, it needs to be, people will like it. It needs to be like, it could go on a real record, or it could go in an art museum or whatever. And it's like, we just need to let ourselves be seen. Mm-hmm. We need to, instead of thinking, what do you want to hear? And you think, what do I want to say? Right?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want to see? What do I want to draw? What story do I want to tell? Yeah.
There's resonance in that. What story do I want to tell? Because it's resonating with you. And then it resonates with another person. And good art, it just creates connection. Like it's like the simplest thing in the world.
Trying to figure out is like, what do other people want, or what would succeed, or what will other people, then you're never going to have an accurate instinct on that. The answer to that question. You'll always be following trends or guessing at that. But
we'll put you up here. It keeps you stuck in your head.
It does. It does. Yeah. But if you know what you deeply feel and what deeply resonates with you and moves you, it one way either makes you angry or makes you full of joy or makes you grieve. Or if you know what those things are for you, then that means you've identified a real thing. Like, here's the thing that I am truly reacting and responding to, resonating with. And that means for anyone who's like me, they will too. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, if your creative ethics are tuned correctly, then it gets a like being artists being self-indulgent gets a really bad rap. I think that like if your creative instincts are tuned correctly, then who would you rather a great artist indulge? Who would you rather them indulge? Their audience, the radio, the record label, their expectations about the market, whatever. If they're really looking in, if they're being vulnerable and honest, then like there's nothing you would rather an artist indulge than their true creative instinct, because that's the thing that's gonna dip the bucket into the deep well of resonance and feeling that's going to then if you amplify and put that somewhere where it can be found, it will be found by people who share that story. And the more specific, the better, because the narrower, the deeper. And so like, that's why that works. And so for me, it's been a matter of figuring out, who are those people? What is it that I am somehow uniquely doing for them that speaks to some specific resonance in our stories together? And how can I focus all of my obsessive attention on that? And the more I've managed to do that, the more I've managed to stay successful at it, even with a very small audience. And so that's been kind of the trick, you know?
Oh, man.
Well, and I think you have a really big impact with that small audience. Like I mentioned to my husband that I was going to be interviewing you, and I don't know a lot of your work, but he's followed you for a long time. Hmm. And he goes, oh, Derek Webb, he's the reason I'm a pacifist. And I was like, what? Like, because it's been true for so long. Like, I, you know, we've been together for, we got married in 2007. And I was like, how do I not know? And, you know, so he showed me the lyrics, something to do with Show Me Who Jesus Would Kill.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a mocking, the record of a Mockingbird that was, yeah, okay. It got very political. And I think that song is on that record, yeah.
Yeah, and so, and so, yeah, and that's something that you wrote. And I mean, anything where you get political, right, that's going to immediately make a lot of people mad. Mm-hmm. But that's a lyric that he carried with him for a long time. Mm. And like shaped who he is, but also resonated with him at the right point in his story and his, right. Yeah. His creative making of
it was
life.
Clearly something he was looking for, but like when you hear something distilled into the language that you couldn't find, and that happens to me all the time with music, and that's why that's why it matters when you find that kind of language and you find those words and you share them, because it's like there are a lot of people who are just like he was, who are poring over those ideas, and then when they hear something that's distilling something that they're preoccupied with, it makes that connection, and that's what you're looking for. So it's like I didn't give him that, but he was already on the hunt, and when he found that language, it distilled it for him in a meaningful way.
Totally.
And that's what you hope you're doing. That's what you hope. But if I wasn't doing it very specifically for myself all the time, like you said, it's like, then I would be saying broader things that mean less to me, and they will mean less and resonate less with a larger group of people. And that's just not, and here's the, as I said before, you can do that. And there's no right or wrong. You can do that. It's not incumbent on every artist to go this deep and to go this narrow. It's not. But for me, it's like, this is what I'm spending my life doing. And so this has been my entire life for 30 years. I mean, we started Cademan's in 92. So it's like, I'm 30 years in this job, 20 years as solo artist, 10 years in Cademan's. So it's like, at this point, like this is my life's work. So it's like, I want to spend it doing something where I feel like I can really contribute. And for me, that's what it looks like. For other people, it might not, and that's okay.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack with this conversation. So we are going to push pause, and I want to offer a few questions for you to consider today. If you're connected with an Orchard table gathering or another group of people you trust, we encourage you to use these questions for conversation in your community. These also could be really helpful questions for you to dive into as you contemplate your own creativity through journaling and reflection. First, we talked a lot about labels and categories of art, kind of like music genres. How do you see labels and categories like that as helpful or unhelpful, or maybe a little bit of both for creativity? Next, Derek posed a question, what is the most peculiar thing about you? What is the weirdest, most peculiar part of your story that maybe you've kept hidden or unshared? Perhaps maybe because there isn't a category for your story to fit into, or maybe there's something in you that is afraid of people truly seeing you. Last, Derek encouraged us to get more specific with what we are creating, to think smaller and more narrow about who we are creating for. He said, the narrower, the deeper. What is the invitation in that for you today? Where's the resonance that you feel deep in you about your own creative instinct? Now, next week, we're going to pick up right where we left off in our conversation for a really interesting part two, where we'll get to hear what Derek has been experiencing these past several weeks as he's utilized his voice to speak up on behalf of marginalized groups like the LGBTQ community. And how the impact of that voice has had some really surprising results. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss part two of our conversation with Derek Webb next week. Now, I'm going to hand it off to Scott Hodge. Scott.
Wow, what a rich and thought-provoking conversation with Derek. Derek Webb, thank you so much. And of course, Benjamin and Anna, thank you. I love the way you guys do such a great job of drawing out such beautiful insight. Now, friends, before we go, I want to take just a moment and remind you that at the Orchard Community, our vision has always been about helping people become who they've been created to be. Man, that's a journey, friends, that we are privileged to undertake. It is a journey that we are committed to walking together. And so with that in mind, if you have been impacted by God's work in and through the Orchard Community, I'd like to invite you to be a part of supporting this vision. You know, your contribution is a way to give back. It's a way to, well, it enables us to continue and expand the work that has touched each of our lives and the lives of so many others. And so your financial support, because everything we do, it really is done through people's support. Your financial support directly contributes to our weekly digital liturgies, to our table gatherings, to our monthly in-person gatherings, to the production of our Orchard Conversations podcast, to so many things. And in other words, it's because of you that we can create opportunities for deeper connection, deeper community, spiritual exploration, and growth in our lives. So with that said, there's a couple ways that you can give and you can support this work. You can give by going to our website, theorchardcommunity.com/give. If you're watching this on Sunday morning, you can click on the giving button in the chat window. You can also mail a check to the Orchard Community at the P.O. box that is on the screens. But know this, friends, okay? Every gift matters regardless of its size, okay? And then lastly, I want to express our profound gratitude to those who currently support the Orchard. Your generosity fuels our mission, and we could not do this work without you. So thank you for your support and your partnership. Now, before you go, one last thing. I have a benediction, all right? So open your hearts. Friends, okay, are you ready? Open your hearts, receive this beloved community. As you step into the world, remember to cherish the specifics, the unique details that make you, you. Embrace the peculiarities, kind of, and the individual tales that the divine intricately wove into each of us. And like Jesus, may you embody love in your own unique ways. And so friends, now go forth, bearing the Creator's image and doing so as a beacon of love and creativity. Amen. Amen. Friends, you are loved, and we'll see you again soon.